and welcome to episode 2 of the Cool Tribe podcast. My name is Alan O'Donovan and I'm your host. This podcast is powered by Cloud Forest. Cloud Forest is a climate action company whose mission is to create 100 forests for the planet along Ireland's Wild Atlantic Way. This week, we chatted with endurance cyclist and Cloud Forest endurance team member, Paul Caldwell. Paul has competed in many cycling disciplines throughout the years. He has had significant success at a national level, which peaked with him claiming the Masters National Marathon Championships in 2017. In 2021, Paul won the Wild Mayo Ultra 650 race and completed the entire Wicklow Way out and back in the fastest known time of 20 hours unsupported. So, without further ado, let's get straight into the podcast. Hello and welcome to the Cool Tribe podcast. My name is Alan O'Donovan. I'm your host. I'm here with Bernard Pender.
How's it going?
And Paul Caldwell.
How are you, Alan?
So,
how are you, Bernard?
I thought that was Tommy Tiernan for a minute. I'm so disappointed.
I'm funnier.
So let's get right into it with the questions. First question was, how did you get into endurance sports and mainly cycling?
So, cut a long story short, I basically took up endurance sport as a form of getting fit for motorsport, a motocross I used to do years ago. And I ended up taking up cycling as kind of a means to keep fit. And then I ended up falling in love with cycling more than the motocross. So there, and I got less injured.
And how long ago was that?
That must have been back 12 years ago, roughly.
Okay.
So I was late to the game.
And motocross, so yeah, you did that for 5-6 years?
Yeah, I actually did it when I was younger, when I was about 16 and 17, and I wasn't very good at it. And then I took it back up when I was in my mid-20s, and I wasn't very good at it then either.
Getting on the motorbike and admitting that you're not very good at it sort of tells a story, doesn't it?
My ribs can tell the story as well, because it broke a few of them with it.
So making the transition into endurance cycling, and you're a renowned endurance cyclist, and obviously we're so proud to have you in the Cloud Forest endurance team. What sort of training is involved?
So it's nothing really specific. I kind of enjoy the time on the bike, whether it's actually like structured training or whether it's just getting out with a couple of mates and kind of having a laugh. I do a little bit of structured training, and lately it's kind of seems to be confined to kind of turbo trainer in the house, just because you can get a big...
Just to clarify, what's turbo trainer? Is that the...
So you basically put the bike onto this kind of, you know, mock back wheel, and it's kind of intelligent, and it kind of, you can run through kind of different training schedules with it, and it'll ramp the resistance and stuff for you. So it's actually pretty technical when you start getting into it. It's just time efficient, and if you're working all day, you can't really get out on your bike, and sometimes it's a lot of hassle to get out on the bike, so... The turbo's grand. You just go out to the shed and you bash out an hour, and it's a pretty hard hour.
And that'll keep your level of fitness.
Yeah.
Okay. So exactly. I'm really interested in, like, since we got involved with you, probably, you know, at the start of Cloud Forest's journey, I've seen you taking part in these really intensive races, long races. What's the longest cycling route you've...
So the longest one I've done is I call it the Ireland Divide. It was kind of something I planned up myself, and I done it during COVID. There was a break at the end of the summer in 2020, and I planned this route to raise money for a friend of mine. And that kind of was the start of the team, as we say, because I kind of had the whole background stuff done for that with the social media and stuff. So that was kind of the start of the team. So what I did was I planned a route from basically Cork, the bottom of Cork where the cable car is?
Barra.
Yeah. So there's like a little, where the cable car is, car station. So it's Castletown Bear.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
it was further south of Castletown Bear, so it's in the wilds, like. And if you ever seen the
you
cable
can't get
car,
much further
oh man, yeah, exactly. You could go onto Bear Island, I didn't like mainland. That cable car at all. So anyway, I started from there, and I basically planned a route all the way off road, up as far as Cavan. And basically it took in the Brefni Way, which is like a walking route, an off-road walking route from the Beara Peninsula all the way to it's a Black Lion in Cavan. So I did that, and that was 780 kilometers. Now, I did that over 4 days, but I think there was something like, I can't remember off the top of my head, but there was at least 15,000 meters climbing in the whole thing. Now I did have kind of support on that as well. So I had a friend of mine kind of follow me in a van, and he kind of had all the bits and pieces that I may have needed, but a lot of the gear I would have been carrying as I was kind of off the beaten track a good bit, and then I meet him at certain points. So but that was amazing. Yeah, that was an amazing journey, but it was super tough.
I'd say that's a tough slog, not only on the body but also sort of the mind, of sort of knowing every day you have to get up and you have another
whatever. Yeah, it was really hard. Mm. And plus the first night, it was kind of stormy conditions, like kind of similar to tonight. Mm. And I kind of got slapped with a big thunderstorm at the end of it. Yeah. And I kind of was touch and go for a while, like lost touch of my friend. And only for that I had the tracker on, I was getting the helicopter out to rescue me.
Really, yeah?
Yeah, so... but we got through it anyway. That first night kind of knocked me for six. But sure, you just have to kind of rebuild and keep going, you know. Yeah. So just kind of was resilient enough and got it back on the bike the next day. And once I did that, sure, that was it. Nothing could stop me then, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It is. It's hard in the mind as well. You go through every emotion when you're on a cycle.
And I think the important thing is, like, the theme of this season is sacrifice. And one of the things we wanted to talk to you about, like, it's the sacrifice you're making. There's probably a sacrifice... the family life. There's certainly a sacrifice in terms of the amount of time that you've got to give up in terms of your training. But talk to us, do you see it as a sacrifice, or do you see it as a...
Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. It depends, really. Sometimes it's very rewarding and it's you really appreciate it, and other times, yeah, it's a sacrifice. It depends on the humour and how deep you go. And, you know, obviously, if you kind of plan a big event and you're building up to it, the pressure becomes more and more towards the event, and you're wondering, did you do enough? And, you know, and you're taking time away from family, and you're watching what you eat, and you're this, that, and the other. So that would be the kind of the sacrifice part. But then other times when you don't have a goal and you just kind of set off, that's when it becomes kind of a pleasure.
I'm been dying to ask you this question.
Right, I'm nervous.
No, you shouldn't be nervous at all. I'm really interested in the food element. We had Shane Carr, the Department of Health whistleblower, in with us on previous podcasts, and he's talking about how he became a vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Shane's a civil servant, and he probably walks and maybe does a bit of running, but you're an endurance cyclist.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're a vegetarian.
I am a vegetarian, yeah.
You're a vegetarian. How long are you a vegetarian?
Oh, it must be about 5 to 6 years, I think, at this stage. Lost count.
So how do you prepare for endurance cycling? Is this a common misconception that you have to eat meat? And I know, I've seen documentaries on Netflix and American footballers, and they're on plant-based diets, so sort of understand it. But talk to me about that sacrifice of sacrificing meat, preparation, diet, endurance cycling.
So, to me, I think it is it's a common misconception. It didn't really affect me in any way, shape, or form. In fact, it probably helped me in a certain regard. I never had an issue with low energy, and I never really thought about it too much. And I think the thing with it is, I think it's what you're told, and you'll believe what you're told sometimes. And personally for me, I never even crossed my mind that this was going to be kind of have health implications or anything. And to be honest with you, like, it's no disadvantage for me not eating meat. Like,
well, that's incredible to hear, because one of the things we've got our series, which is our Change One Little Thing, and we were trying to persuade meat eaters to have one day of a plant-based, get up in the morning, plant-based breakfast, plant-based lunch, plant-based dinner. you know, talk to us about the type of foods that, that you typically have.
So, like...
And that, and what you would take with you on an endurance cycling.
Yeah, so, like, I have a couple of things. I have a couple of go-tos, right? So I'm big, I like beans and, you know, kind of lentils and stuff like that. So legumes and stuff like that. And I'm big on rice. I probably eat too much carbs now, to be honest with you, which is grand for someone like me, like who's kind of burning them off and stuff. But I'm a big fan of rice, pastas, bread. I love bread.
Okay.
Too much. But look, it's, you know, it's all about kind of... It's kind of finding the balance of what works, because obviously you have to have your fats, your proteins, this, that, and the other. But again, as I said, generally food nowadays, if you eat correct and you eat kind of well, you'll kind of pick up all these, you know, things in the good nutrition that you eat. You know what I mean? You're not going to, if you break it all down and whatever, and you decompartmentalize everything, you know, sometimes that's probably not good for you, because you'll overthink it and it'll just go all over the place. But generally, if you eat when you're hungry and you eat the right things when you're hungry, and you know, you don't deprive yourself of anything. And there is nowadays, like, there's an awful lot of alternatives out there to, you know, meat and, you know, even chocolate and stuff. Like, you know, there's, like, even if you're vegan, there's no milk and a lot of, you know, dark chocolate and stuff like that. So you can compromise things a lot easier now than maybe a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I don't think it's as big a sacrifice as it was previously. No, I think
definitely
it's
not. Like I can't even remember. That's what I said. When I swapped over to not eating meat, like, I was eating fish for a while, and then I kind of wasn't a big lover of fish for a while, you know, after. And then I kind of said, you know what, you know, I'm going to cut this out too. And then just kind of... just never really thought of it after that, you know. And it was easier now because my wife was vegan and all the meals she was preparing were kind of, you know, vegan based, and, you know, they were plant based. And, you know, I don't drink much dairy or, you know, milk or anything like that. So I'd always go to oat milk. I actually prefer the taste of it and stuff. And now I probably can't drink cow's milk now because I just don't like the taste of it. Yeah, now. I've gone away from it. And I think a lot of people are doing that now as well. But, like, I think you can overthink it. And, you know, it was my personal choice, and it was, you know, it was due to, you know, I was conscious of climate, I was conscious of animals, I'm a huge animal lover. And, you know, like, no living being should suffer, you know, at the hands of another. So, you know, that's just, it's just what it is. I don't push it on anyone. I just say, look, I'm vegetarian. I know sometimes people make a big deal out of it, but, you know, I just, yeah, whatever. Like,
any tips for a good plant-based meal for a meat lover?
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm a big lover of curries and stuff like that, and I think that kind of falls in my favour. I do like a good chickpea curry. I know people slag them and they're a bit kind of, you know, they're a bit hipster or whatever, but with the happy pair,
you're a bit of a hipster.
Pot calling the kettle black there. So anyway, they have a couple of quick recipes you can actually do in a couple of minutes, and they're on YouTube, and they're, some of them are amazing. They're absolutely some of the best meals you'll have, taste wise everything. And it's a lot of spices, a lot of beans, a lot of chickpeas and stuff like that, and you can do them in 5 minutes. And
so that's like, it's so interesting to, you know, the second person we've had on the podcast, vegetarian, and really the same motives as well, based around animals and not wanting to hurt animals, and that was their motivation.
Yeah.
Coming back to your endurance cycling a little bit, talk to me about investment in endurance cycling, the costs involved. If any of our listeners wanted to get an endurance bike, what's the entry level and what's the pinnacle of what you can spend?
Yeah, well, that range is vast, you know. So, really? Like, it depends on what level you come in at. When I started, I'll just start, like, from where I came from, I, like, bought a bike on, was it Adverts or Dundeal or something, for, like, €200. And it was basically, like, a dirt jumper bike, right? So it was way too small for me. But all I had, I was just kind of enamored because I had suspension and I had, like, fatter tires and whatever. But I had, like, really small wheels, and, like, the bike was way too small for me. And I got a, I just said, right, look, I'll chance it with a cheap bike, see how I go, you know. And then I started going up to Take Knock, up to the Dublin Mountains, and kind of trying to ride some of the trails up there, and the bike was just not able for...
I'd say up there as well, you're sort of punished for not having the bike.
Like, I had no gears on it. I think there was like a nine speed, and it was like a single ring at the front, and I couldn't even climb up the hill. I remember walking the bike up the hill, and I was going, what am I doing on this thing? Like, this thing is like a BMX or something, you know? But I just kind of got around a little bit and then went, oh, look at all this that's out there, you know. And then you start kind of Googling stuff and going having a look. And then obviously you kind of start looking at these entry level races and kind of sussing that out. So that's a good way to start, like kind of start small, kind of cheap bike, maybe get it on the bike to work. Kind of go, oh, look at, I'll give this a shot. I'll go up the mountains. I'll have a look. If I like it, I like it. I'll invest in it. If not, sure, look, I tried it. That's the main thing. But it was a lot cheaper than motocross at the time. So then obviously the more I got into it, the more money I kind of threw at it.
I always remember the freedom I had when I got my first bike when I was serving my time as an apprentice networks electrician in the ESB, that when I got a racing bike, and I didn't rely on public transport, and I didn't rely on a lift from my dad. I was able to just take it out in the morning and head straight to work. And I did that for a period of time, and it's a great freedom.
Exactly.
But I only did it during the summer. I'm not one of these guys that goes out in all weathers. Yeah. So one of the things that's important for us, and certainly our support for you and the cycling team, is encouraging people to maybe look at alternative forms of transport that are non-carbon, low carbon, and that's important to us. So like we are so happy to support the Endurance Cycling Team, the Cloud Force, and your efforts. And we hopefully will have Ruth Brooks in for a chat there. You know, who's a member of the team. But talk to me in terms of, like, you're looking at a serious investment. It's a hobby. But it's not really a hobby for you, Paul, is it? You're sort of up there as one of the stars of the circuit, aren't you? You're being modest now.
I know. Like, look, I came up through the ranks fairly quickly, and you know, and I picked it up very fast, and then I got through all the levels fairly quickly, and I kind of won some events, and I was lucky enough to kind of, you know, to get through them and to be on the podium, and that I started really getting into the kind of nitty gritty and started getting up there with some of the best guys, and obviously the better I got, the more I pushed myself, so I kind of, that kind of, the two of them kind of worked with each other, and then I got pretty serious, I must say. I did. But again, I think what I always come back to is, as you said, it's the freedom on the bike. It's the ability to go anywhere on these two wheels that doesn't really cost that much if you compare it to a car or whatever. And to actually get there under your own power is just, it's phenomenal. Like, and I really think, like, of all the competitions I've done and all the, you know, podiums I've been on and whatever other stuff, I always go back to being able to go out with my bike and go and find this route and just ride out on this route or ride up the mountains with me mates. And just, it always comes back to that. It's that sense of freedom and self-propulsion and just kind of getting out there and just being on the top of this mountain and looking around going, I got up here on my bike, you know, and going, well, that's pretty cool. Like, it is. It's deadly. Yeah. And that's what it comes back to. It's a love for that. Like,
and I think the great thing about the endurance cycling end, it's that connection to nature.
Exactly.
Where, you know, where certainly I'd see the videos that you post, you're going through forests, you're going through up the side of mountains, you're going through streams. It's this connection to nature that I think is really inspiring. If anybody follows certainly your social channels, the Cloud Forest Endurance Team, or even our social channels when we're promoting, you know, a race that you've done, or, and we're trying to, the feedback we've got from people is, how do I get into this? And that's why we've invited you in today, to so you can let people know where
it's amazing, because like even the LinkedIn thing, it just brings so many other people who wouldn't have been on their radar. And then you see the two, you see Cloud Forests, obviously Climate Action, and then you see the Endurance Team, which is kind of, you know, it's own kind of, has its own benefits as well, as you said, health and everything, and you're trying to encourage people to get out, and then you put the two of them together, it's like a match made in heaven.
Then I get
the contacts as well, like, and people are like, people who wouldn't have normally followed the team, or they're probably not cyclists at all. And I just get all these messages from them and, you know, asking you questions and stuff. And it's just, it's brilliant, because that's the whole point of it. That is the whole point of it.
Will we move on to something that we want to hear you moan about?
Oh, God.
You did enough moaning over the last couple of weeks.
It's like Roy Keane and Saipan.
I had to draw a line under it.
Can you tell us how you feel about the DAA?
Have you got is 2 hours?
Is it their fault? It has to be the airline. So just to put it in context, Paul prepared for one of the most amazing endurance cycling races in Iceland.
The Rift, Iceland.
Put in all the hard yards, got the money together, got going. So that's
been kind of, as we said, it's probably about 2 years in the making, where I got the entry, obviously pre-COVID, I think. And had the entry, and I've been kind of waiting on the list since then. And then, obviously, look, I was looking forward to it a huge amount. And the way it worked out wasn't ideal. It was far from ideal. But so we went. I had trained for what? I got COVID in April myself, and I was pretty sick. And I took a kind of an easy ramp back into it. Started training pretty, not heavily, but just kind of started getting myself up to speed. And when you're consistent, it doesn't take very long. So I started going back at it, obviously looking forward to it. I had all my stuff booked. And like, if anyone knows Iceland, it's a pretty expensive place to be in, or to travel around. And so I had everything planned, flights bought and the whole lot. So anyway, we got on the airplane, and all was going well. I was very relaxed. It was lovely, and I was looking forward to it, and it was brilliant. And we landed in Reykjavik, and there was 5 of us Irish guys, and we'd all had our bikes with us, and we were all doing the same race. So anyway, get off the plane in Reykjavik, we're going through, and I was like, oh, well, that was a lovely flight, and delighted with myself. And we got to the baggage claim, and probably waiting a little bit longer than usual anyway, but the guys had the air tags on their bags, and one of them turns around and goes, well, mine's pinging back in Dublin. And then I was like, thinking he was messing. I was like, go away out of that. No, don't be messing. Stop. So anyway, then the next lad goes, yeah, mine's doing the same. Then the third lad goes, yeah, mine's doing the same. So the 3 bikes were pinging back in Dublin. And I was like, well, if the 3 of them back in Dublin, the 5 of them back in Dublin. And basically they forgot to load. Well, they didn't forget. I think there was more of a, they were obviously delayed in loading the plane, and then they just made the decision that the plane was going to go without these bags. And unfortunately, everything of mine was in that bag. All my gear, all I had was my helmet and a bit of clothes. Like, I think I had a day's worth of clothes in a carry-on bag, and nothing else. Everything else, all my bikes, my bike, my spares, my helmet, or not my helmet, I have my helmet, my shoes, all my kit, all my lovely Cloud Forest kit, all was in the bag.
What's the initial reaction? What's the feeling?
You're just disbelief. It's disbelief, Alan. You're just sitting there and you're just going, this has to be a joke. And then when you're in the airport for 2 hours filling out this lost baggage form, then you know it's kind of, that's when it gets pretty real. And you're just kind of, everything goes through your head. So luckily enough, I kind of paired up with this guy, and he was in the same situation. And luckily enough, he had a car. I was actually planning on using my bike to get around. I was going to get the bus to my hostel, start building the bike, and then get round on the bike. That was my plan, because I wanted to see the place on the bike, because as you said, you experience it more when you're out there and you're on the road and you're traveling by bike. So anyway, he said, right, look, I'll drop you to your hostel and we'll go and we'll make a plan tomorrow, and hopefully the bikes arrive tomorrow. So kind of still in disbelief, kind of all thoughts going through my head, but I said, look, all we can do is hope for the best. And, you know, so then next day, drove to the airport, flight from Dublin arrives, no bikes arrive on the flight from Dublin. So then we're really into it. So in the meantime, actually, the night before, I'd kind of messaged a couple of Facebook groups of Icelandic bikers and said, look, lads, in a bit of a pickle here. A couple of us our bikes were left behind. Any chance we can get kind of loaners? And to be fair to them, we got loads of responses. Some of them, the bikes wouldn't have fitted. They were a bit small and stuff, but there was one or two now that were just spot on. So we kind of kept them guys in the wings. And I said, look, hang on a sec, we're going to check the airport, and if not, we'll be back in touch. So it was about 5 o'clock we left the airport, and like the race is at 7 o'clock the next morning, you know. So we left the airport. I said to the two of us, sat there looking at each other in the car park, and we went, well, what do we do? And I says, look, we'll go and we'll organize these bikes, we'll go get them. And now the guy that was with me had all his gear. Lucky enough, he was only missing a helmet, and he was able to get a helmet fairly easily. So anyway, we scrambled, we got the bikes, and then we also had to go to the bike shop, and I had no gear, so I had to go and spend, I think I was spending roughly about €500 on shoes and jerseys and shorts and all this sort of crack. And but in the whole haste of getting all this stuff together, I completely forgot that I needed like a multi-tool and a pump and all this stuff if I got a puncture and all this, because it's a 200k race. Like, you're not going out and just pootling around and then someone's going to pick you up. You're in the wilderness, like 200k in the middle of nowhere. Like, and I just didn't think of it. I was just like, I just need to get stuff and I need to get it all together and just get out and do it. And that was it. And I knew, well, if I didn't do it, I'd be kicking myself. Like, it's too far to come not to kind of try at least, you know. So I kind of just kind of gritted my teeth and said, right, this is what's happening. So look, I got nutrition. All my nutrition was in the bag. Same thing you were talking about. So I have, actually, this is kind of dovetails back into the stuff you were talking about. So I have this stuff I use. It's called Tailwind Nutrition, and it's actually vegan. But it's very good. It's very easy on my stomach. There's a great mix of like maltodextrin and all this kind of stuff that kind of helps keep your levels, your carbs, your carb intake is fairly high on it, and it's a drink, so it's pretty easy to drink. It doesn't wreak havoc with my guts, because a lot of that stuff can be pretty, you know, synthetic and can turn your gut to stone now, to be honest. But so I kind of had to scramble. There was a shop across the road, so I ran in there and got some like Isostar stuff. It was whatever was there, and I looked at the carb content and went, "Ash, this'll do," and put it all into a bag, and then started making my way out towards where the race was starting and hoping for the best, you know. So that was it. I met a couple other Irish guys there. Two of them actually had their bikes. They were on a different flight. They flew out the day before. So met up with those guys. They kind of, we all kind of got together, set up the bikes and got going. And yeah, just pumped up the tires really hard so I wouldn't get a puncture, and went, right, let's do this. Like, and yeah, it just kind of had to make it happen. Like, just had to make it work. Like,
when you crossed the finish line, was that, I know there's always a sense of achievement when you do a race like that, but was there an extra sort of, you had to go the extra mile, you had to do all this, you had to spend £500, you had to go through so much adversity over only 2 days.
Yeah.
Crossing the finish line, was there an extra feeling of...
Yeah, it was a strange one.
Or was it relief?
It was relief. Yeah. It was relief to get there. It was relief to do it. Mm. I wasn't really racing. I went out, kind of went, and I said, look, I may forget about racing, like, and actually trying to be competitive, because I'm always like, look, I'm a very competitive person, so I always kind of, it's always in me to push the hardest I can. But for that, I just said, look, don't overdo it here. Like, you know, you have to kind of, you have to balance it. Like, you know, you're on someone else's bike. You've had a half an hour to set it up. You've no spares. You've no tubes. I had a tube. You have no multi-tools. You've no pumps. Like, so, you know, just get around, do it, and get around as kind of quickly as you can, but just don't kind of bust yourself. So yeah, so when I finished, it was I was cooked, because of the bike and the nutrition thing as well. Around 120k, I was just, my stomach was not having it. It just went to cramp central. It just, I had to stop. And actually, the streams in Iceland, the beauty of it is that the streams are glacial. So like, all the water is coming from the mountains. Like, so they're absolutely crystal clear. Some of the nicest water you'll ever drink, cleanest water you'll ever drink. So I stopped at this kind of a little stream and topped up and just kept drinking water, just kind of balance out, because I was obviously after drinking too much of this mix that just I haven't no experience with. So anyway, drank a good bit of water, kind of balanced it out. My stomach kind of started coming too, but I was just awkward. I felt awkward on the bike. I felt uncomfortable. I just got to the stage where nothing was fitting. I couldn't sit down in a position that would work for me. Whereas on my bike, I know where I'm the go-to kind of spots.
It's like
to
a
kind
tool.
Of,
like it's,
exactly. Yeah, it's like an anything.
Of yourself.
Exactly, yeah. And you're spending 7-8 hours on it. Like, you know what I mean? So like, it's just, it started getting uncomfortable. So I was happy to see the finish line. I was so happy to see it. I was happy to get by, and I was just happy to just, that was it. That was it. I'd done it.
Yeah.
And I made, you know, I kind of damaged limitation of the situation. Yeah, yeah. You know, it was hot. Like, it was an awful experience. Like, if I was to do it again, I probably wouldn't, because it was so, like, the Friday, you wouldn't imagine how stressful that was. Like, it was so stressful. So stressful. But I'd gone to the point of making it happen. And that was kind of, that was it. That determined, that was a determining factor for me, was like, you have the bike, you can get clothes, you can, you know, just put it on the credit card, just do it, just get through it. But I think again, I don't know.
Can I ask you a question? What I'm hearing here is this resilience, this mental resilience, that despite that setback, you basically had the resilience in your mind to go, and you did it.
Yeah.
What would it have been like if the same happened 5 years ago? And I'm asking the same, do you think the result would have been the same? Or do you think that by being an endurance cyclist and, you know, really doing this on a yearly basis, that it's built your mental resilience, it's built your coping mechanism to cope with things that happen? Does that...
Definitely, 100%. Yeah, no. The past couple of years, obviously, the longer events have definitely shaped me into a kind of a different type of cyclist. Like, before, I would have been very kind of conscious of, you know, everything has to be perfect. And, you know, if you're doing a race like an XC, like a XCO, they're called, they're kind of short kind of races, they're hour and a half long. If you're doing one of them, you just, everything has to be perfect. You kind of take minimal amount of stuff and make sure the bike is light and da 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 da, and all your stuff has to line up. You get your good night's sleep before and all this kind of crack. But I think with the endurance, the longer endurance events, it's completely different. It's mind over matter. Like, yeah, like I think Iceland for me kind of proved that it was mind over matter, because in my mind, I was doing it, whether I was racing or not, I was doing it. And it didn't matter what bike I was on. I could have been on my bike that I got first out of adverts. Like, I was doing it, like, and I was going to see how far I could get on this bike or whatever bike I got. But I was had to see how far I could go, and I had to make an effort. And whether I kind of, the only thing that would have stopped me is obviously a really bad crash, or like just my body just completely gave up. But no, I think the mental attitude is a huge thing when it comes to endurance. You know, you have to really you just have to have that mental state, and it builds you. And the more you do them, the more it kind of cements that into you, that, you know, it's all in your head.
It adds a layer of resilience, basically.
Huge.
But I just talk about the bike then. Did the bike show up in Iceland, or did it not show up at all?
Oh yeah, it showed up on Sunday. And I was going home Monday morning. So it showed up Sunday afternoon, and I was heading home Monday. So I picked it up at the airport and brought it home.
You had the pleasure of bringing it home.
Yeah, and then it's not funny. It's funny now, but when we got to Dublin, they lost it again.
Oh, they're stopping.
Not even joking, yeah. And only the fact that the lads had the trackers again, they said, look, the bikes are here, go get them. And then we said we weren't leaving the airport until they got them. So someone had to go out and get them, and they ended up throwing them through the carousel, actually, would you believe? So it was pretty grim, now I have to say. I was never so happy to see the back of the place.
So what in a 60-second, what do you think is the problem at the airport?
There's no control over the baggage situation. Like, they're obviously understaffed. There's no one managing it. They're obviously hiring staff, temp staff. Like, I was talking to a couple of guys in the airport, and they were actually electricians. They were apprentice electricians who were pulled off a site in order to get through the backlog of bags, to sort them out, to bring them to some warehouse out in Sores where they needed to sort the bags where people could come clean.
A military draft.
It's unbelievable. Like, and the lads were just, they had no access around the airport or anything. They were just two young fellas with high vis.
The one thing that sort of points out to me is the community that, obviously, you went over to Iceland, you had no bike, but going into the biking community and just finding a few Facebook groups, it just seems like they were like, everyone was willing to help, and there was no sort of...
Yeah, I'm delighted to come back to that, because they were absolutely amazing. Yeah. These guys were just so good. Like, there was one guy in particular, and he ran the Facebook group, and he just was relentless. He was getting everything sorted for me. Like the guy I actually got, Haldor was his name, I got the bike off, was like, he was doing the Rift, but he was doing the 100K, and he actually got a loan of another bike so I could have his bike. to do it. And he put brand new tires and everything on it for me. Had it perfect. He set it up the way I wanted it. And it was just, you know what, look, it wasn't perfect, but it was definitely a great tool for the job. Like, you know what I mean? It wasn't my bike, but it was the best thing I could have got. And he couldn't do enough for me. He was such a gent. Like, he was such a gent.
Would you find in Ireland it's the same?
I'd hope so. And you know what I said to him? I says, look, man, this is amazing. You're such a cool dude for doing this. This is brilliant. And he goes, well, I'd expect someone to do it for me. And that's all you like community. It's like, as you say, with the Cloud Forest community and all the companies gathering together and you know, they're kind of, you know, they're all talking to each other now and, you know, they're part of this thing. Like, same with cycling and we're all part of something. We're all doing the same thing.
It's a shared mission, isn't it?
It's a shared mission. Yeah, we're all out to kind of enjoy ourselves and, you know, get whatever we get from it. But we're all cyclists, like, and, you know, it's like any community, you know what I mean? It's such a great thing. And when things like that go wrong and when you stand back, you actually realise what you're part of, you know what I mean? When you actually stand back. And kind of look at it and go, yeah, look, these people are amazing. Like, and that's why I'm a cyclist. Mm. And you know, everyone's got each other's back. Like, and it's amazing.
You mentioned earlier the work to bike scheme. Is it the bike to work scheme?
Yeah, bike to work. Yeah,
I know our great cool partners, Decathlon. Myself and Alan had the pleasure of going up to Decathlon. I'd never been inside the store. I'd no reason to. And then of course with the pandemic, I think they opened. We went up and they showed us all the cycling gear they have and the bikes they have, and
it's an amazing place. It's a treasure trove of stuff.
Yeah, like, and we're so happy to have them as a cool partner because it's really the promotion of outdoor sports and what we feel part of our mission is that when you get that connection to nature, you appreciate it more. If you're stuck in a room playing the PlayStation all the time, you don't really care, do you? No.
And that's
maybe that's wrong. Maybe I don't want to alienate people that play the PlayStation.
I feel offended.
There is a primal connection to the outdoors, though. Like, there is a primal thing that just sets something off in your head, and you look around and you go, "Oh my God, look at this!" Like. Yeah. You know what I mean? You can't experience that on a screen. You can't experience that on a computer game. Well, in my opinion, I've never taken to computer games and stuff like that. But when I look around and I'm somewhere amazing, like if I'm riding around Hekla, I'm looking at it going, and you've some of the footage there that I've taken, and hopefully we get to edit it. And like, if you see that, like, that's coming out of my eyes. I'm looking at this stuff that I'm GoPro-ing for people. Like, this is what I experienced. This is why, for me, it just sets something off in my head, and I'm just like, oh, yeah.
How do you think the government could persuade more people? I know they've got their bike to work scheme, and you mentioned that earlier, where you get your tax allowance. But how do you think the government could persuade more people?
The infrastructure in Ireland the cycling infrastructure in Ireland is shocking. But it's horrendous.
It has to be better than it was.
To a point. Okay. I think it is in black spots and where people have actually been unfortunate enough to be, have actually had accidents. I think in general, like, there's been no provision. It's been something that's been overlooked for years and years. And you see now, they've canals and greenways and they're amazing. They're absolutely amazing. They're portals to everywhere. Do you know what I mean? You can ride down. Like, I did a big one down the Barrow Way, and like, it brought me down to Carlow and then brought me past Carlow down to Wexford. Do you know what I mean? But again, in around the cities, it's just the way the city has developed over the years. It's been completely like overlooked. And it's just the infrastructure's just not there. There's nothing there for safety.
You've got the problem then of bike theft.
Yeah.
And of course as well. So that's an issue in terms of if you were cycling to work.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to lock your bike. You need to be taking your bike up to your desk.
But like, you look at Belgium, look at the Netherlands, look at that for Copenhagen. Like, these cities, like, why isn't the government looking at these cities? Like, these are European cities. They're not too unlike our European city, but these people live on their bikes over there. Their bike is their car. Like, you know, maybe the weather, like, but to be fair, Belgium, the weather's not too dissimilar to here, but like, just look at what they're doing. And I think there's like this kind of, people are just kind of, I don't know, I don't know whether they're blind to it or what the story is, but it's just, there's no incentive there for, you know, to push people out to get on these bikes and go, this, you can get around on this thing. And I suppose that's obviously a safety concern as well, is riding around amongst buses and cars and trucks.
Articulated. And, well, yeah. I know they are, you know, the Port Tunnel and removing most of the big trucks from the city centre was an amazing thing. But it
only does so much. It yeah. does only do so much. And it, like, that's what they need to do. They need to put cycle lanes between, like, Swords to city centre. Like, you know, like, you know, they have the ones along the coast and, you know, they've done a bit there, but they kind of don't go anywhere at the same time. You want to put them in areas where they actually go to places, where people will use them to get to spots. Like the Grand Canal, the Royal Canal, amazing. They're absolutely amazing. But for me to get to the Royal Canal is like, I have to cycle on this treacherous road. Now, I did it on Sunday. I did it on Sunday morning very early because I felt safe, right? So, but I, like, if there was something there to get me to there, to bring me to Dublin, man, I'd cycle every day. You know what I mean? And that's just, that's all. And look, I understand, like, the money, it'd just be a huge amount and an extortionate amount of money to do this. But at the same time, if you don't start doing something about it, it's not going to go anywhere. Just going to ignore it and keep ignoring it and going, oh, we don't have the money. And I don't know, like, the oil prices and all this kind of stuff, like, people are, you know, giving out about the price of oil and stuff. But look, you need, I'm kind of, in the back of my head, I'm kind of like, happy about it because it forces people to change their ways.
I think I remember back to the start or mid pandemic, the first real lockdown where everybody was at home. And I remember people, and I remember myself coming outside and going, the air,
clean, yeah.
It's clean.
Yeah.
Because there was no, you know, and exactly. Everyone's going, this is great.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We do fall back.
We've regressed again.
I
do think we missed a chance with the pandemic.
Huge.
An opportunity to sort of change our behaviour. And now it's like, oh, thank God, normality's back. Let's go back to how it was.
People just slide back into it so easily. Like, yeah. And it is habit as well. Like, And there was things, there was little incentives. There was, you know, it was encouraging people to get out. It was encouraging them to use these amazing cycleways that they do have. And then there was a bit of investment. But then that just, once everything started going back, that was it. It just fizzled out then, which was unfortunate. Like, and
I had the pleasure of meeting one of our cool partners on Thursday down at our new forest in Kerry, and they suggested to me that I would take part in a cycle. I said, no, I'm going to nominate Paul that I would take in that I would take part in a cycle. They're going to try and cycle from their offices in Dublin to Kerry down to the Dingle Peninsula for charity.
Beautiful.
For charity. Now, I remember the last time you said to me, Asher, I'll cycle to, you know, plant a day. And I was going, I'm there going, how many days is it going to take? And you said, oh, I'll do it in a day. And I just thought that was incredible thinking, first of all, that you'd be able to do it in a day. Finishing up question, plans for the future. What are you
hoping? At the minute, kind of taking it slow for the minute. Because we're kind of coming out at the tail end of summer into the winter, it's kind of, there's a couple of gravel events coming up and I enjoy them. They're not kind of races as such, but you know, you can kind of go as hard as you want. And it's a great way of meeting people. I love going out and meeting because there is a community now of cyclists, especially in the gravel community, which is kind of people who have been used to be road cyclists or mountain bikers. And they just find that if they kind of get off the roads and, you know, they feel safer. And these events are kind of, they're off-road. They're mostly off-road. There's a couple of sections maybe on-road. But it brings this community together, another community of cyclists. And I love meeting the guys at that, and I love doing those events because they're pretty unique. And they're not races as well, which is brilliant. I think because the racing element kind of adds a whole new seriousness to it. And it's great at times, but sometimes it's just nice to go and ride a bike with a load of people that are similarly minded. And so I'm going to do a couple of those. There's a couple of those coming up. There's a big... Well, there's a big XC marathon that's kind of hasn't been around for a few years because of COVID up in the Cooley Peninsula, up in the Cooley Thriller. That Cooley Thriller, it's what it's called.
Come up with cool names.
It's deadly. Oh, this one is renowned, and the guys that run it are just, they're top notch. These guys are good friends of mine, and man, it's a brilliant event. Really, really hard though. But that's mountain biking. That's XC mountain biking. It's marathon mountain biking. So it's some of the toughest terrain you'll ever get. But that's kind of it for then. You know, I'll kind of wind back. There'll be probably a bit of cyclocross just to keep the fitness up, and then we just start planning for next year and see what has to.
Last question.
Right.
Do you believe in climate change? We love asking this question.
Of course I do. Look at the Well, I don't know. Look at the way the weather's been. Look at it, like.
Well, you're out in the weather the whole time, and you've been out in the weather for the last 10 years, so you probably have a good connection to it.
I do, yeah. And look at it. You see yourself, like, you're there in the middle of the winter and it's 16, 17 degrees. That's not right, like. Why is it not right? Because there's something happening, you know, and it's, of course I believe in it. It's not a myth, or it's not something someone's making up, like, just to keep everyone in check. Like, it's 100%, it's something's happening, and whether people want to believe it or not, you can, you know, it's not a religion, you know what I mean? It isn't a religion, and it's fact. To me, it's fact. I see it. Like, here we are now, we've had a week of 30-odd degrees, and now it's absolutely lashing out of the heavens, and you know, the ground's not going to be able to deal with it. Well, like, we never had these temperatures in Ireland. Like, wake up to it, like, seriously.
I'm really, really happy of what you're doing to spread our message, and, you know, any support we can give you. I know we're looking for the next 12 months to see how we can really get our climate action message out to the cycling community. Not that they need us, but just in terms of what we're trying to do and other people in our space.
Yeah, and but it's an incredible community anyway that we want to be involved in. Like, it's,
guys, I just want to say, like, in this opportunity, like, that wearing this logo, it's amazing, and it's amazing to be part of this and to see all the good things that you guys do and all this amazing forest that you're making. I have to say, it really, like, to be associated is amazing. I'm super proud of it, and I get people asking me all the time, like, oh, what's that and what's that, and, like, you know, and then when I actually sit down and I tell them, like, I go, oh yeah, well, the guys are planting forests and they're getting people to invest in these forests and this land that, you know, would be just kind of just left. They're amazed. Like, they're amazed. And the amount of people that, you know, I'm sure you've got a lot of hits over, you know, from me explaining it to people and seeing the logo and seeing the jersey, because that's a huge part of it for me, is just getting that message out as well. And I'm so proud to be putting it out there.
I think the great thing about, and some people call us tree planters, and I don't know whether they're trying to insult us or give us a compliment, but I think the big thing for us is that our forests for the planet, when we introduced our beehives, our Irish native honey beehives in, people started seeing that the mission wasn't, even though we were creating these, what we call these great forests, and we were getting people connected to nature, and you were spreading the message that the message was wider, that, you know, we're facing into extinction events.
Of course,
in the world. And, you know, when we engaged with the Irish Native Honeybee Society, and they came and they visited us, the amount I learned. Yeah. But there's people like communities, and this is the important thing. Mm. The people that are as passionate about the cycling that you met in Iceland, mm-hmm. and their community.
Exactly.
There's a community of people as passionate about Irish native honeybees. The same with the bats, the same with the frogs. We'd in the colleges down, and we were talking about frog hopping pools.
Bats
on Clough Forest One. And what we're trying to just do is harness that community, join them, bring them. And you know what the shocking thing was? They were so, a lot of the people that we engaged with were asking us what we wanted from it.
Yeah, yeah, and that's,
we
were
like,
it.
No, we're just going to, we want promote, you to, yeah. we want to help you.
That's the nature of things,
and
now.
And that's it. And it's the same as what the guys did for you in Iceland. So
exactly, yeah. It's like, look, we bring all these communities together into one massive community. And that's the way it builds it up. You build up speed that way and you build up strength that way. Yeah. So get all these communities together with all the same vision, you know, and we've all the same interests. And, you know, eventually we'll get there. It's going to be tough, you know. It is going to be tough, but
it won't be as bad as Iceland, I thought.
Nothing could be as bad as Iceland. It'll just take a bit longer, but it'll be fine. But no, look at it. I think that's a massive thing, Bernard. Yeah, it's just get all these communities together with the same vision and with the same end goal, and that's it. And you know, thanks. And eventually we'll get there.
Thanks for coming on, Bob.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Cheers.